From the heart of our nation's capital in Washington, D.C., bringing compelling interviews, insightful analysis, taking you beyond the headlines and sound bites into conversations with our nation's leaders and newsmakers, all from a biblical worldview. Washington Watch with Tony Perkins starts now.
It's obviously something that we're continuing to monitor very closely. As you've heard others in the U.S. government talk about, you know, there is no surprise here that they've been developing and fostering this relationship. So it is something that we're going to take seriously, and it's something that we're going to continue to monitor.
Perkins, that was Pentagon Press Secretary Major General Pat Ryder discussing Russian President Vladimir Putin and his trip to North Korea, where dictator Kim Jong-un and Putin signed a strategic security pact that requires the two countries to provide immediate military aid if one of the two partners is attacked. The agreement harkens back to the Cold War treaty between North Korea and the then USSR. North Dakota Senator Kevin Cramer, a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, joins me in just a moment. Speaking of national security,
you've got the Democrats who want to turn the entire military into a giant trans experiment. They want to force women to accept men in their sports. They want to turn biological women into men. And then you got a whole group of Republicans who just want more people to fight all these wars they want to get us into. And the rest of the country, the normal people, are like, leave our daughters alone. This is insane stuff.
That was Missouri Senator Josh Hawley on Fox's The Ingram Angle earlier this week. The debate over women in the draft was sparked again by this year's National Defense Authorization Act that's been has been advanced in the Senate, which includes a provision that, if approved, would require for the first time in history all women, like men, to register for the Selective Service Draft. We'll talk with Tom Kilgannon, who served on the National Commission on Military, National, and Public Service, which actually conducted a full review of the military selective service process. Those pushing the radical gender ideology, which is subjecting minors to surgeries and experimental drugs, are trying to make their quest like Hotel California, where you can check in, but you can never get out. Yesterday, the Democrat governor of Arizona, Katie Hobbs, vetoed a bill that would have required insurance companies to cover detransition procedures. Insurance companies in about half the states cover gender transitioning procedures, but most do not provide detransitioning coverage. Why? Walt Heyer, senior fellow, FRC Center for Family Studies, and someone who did detransition, will join me later. And the left is increasingly concerned about the growth of homeschooling in America post-COVID. In a piece last month in Scientific American, the editors called for the federal government to begin regulating homeschooling, even calling for homeschool parents to pass an initial background check to be able to teach their own children. Now, this is not the Babylon Bee. It's the Scientific American. Now, the founder of Homeschool Legal Defense, Mike Ferris, will join me for what I'm sure will be a very lively conversation. The website, Tony Perkins. Find out more about the program, and lots of resources there for you as well. Biblical truth, as we just talked about, is under attack in our culture today, and we must defend the Christian faith. And I want to ask you to stand with me in the effort here at the Family Research Council as we come to the end of our fiscal year on June 30th. Generous friends of FRC have put forward a $2.5 million challenge match, which means whatever you give will be doubled. Now, if you partner with us right now before June the 30th, you can have twice the impact. To join us in defending the faith, text the word DEFEND to 67742. That's DEFEND to 67742. Yesterday, Russian President Vladimir Putin and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un agreed to a mutual defense partnership, reviving a Cold War alliance as they pledged solidarity in challenging the United States and its allies. This troubling development comes as inspectors with the International Atomic Energy Agency warned that Iran has expanded its primary nuclear facility and could soon have new options for quickly assembling a nuclear arsenal. Is this another result of the Biden administration's weakness on the international stage? And can we expect additional adversaries and rogue agents to challenge the United States and its allies? Joining me now to discuss this is Senator Kevin Cramer from North Dakota. He serves on four Senate committees, including the Senate Armed Services Committee. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
Great to see you. Thanks for the opportunity, Tony.
So Russia and North Korea have completed a new comprehensive strategic partnership agreement. What do you think this will mean, practically speaking?
Well, practically speaking, I'm not sure exactly what it means, but what it is intended to mean is that our adversaries are becoming allies with one another. It's not a natural relationship, as you might, some people might think, well, gee, a couple of communist countries getting together, that doesn't seem like such a strange deal. But the reality is, up until now, they hadn't had the common enemy that they have in such a big way as they have in the United States, and a common enemy, to your point, that is increasingly projecting weakness on the geopolitical stage. And because of that projection of weakness, I believe they feel emboldened, but they also feel emboldened by the fact that they feel threatened. But you throw in the mullahs in Iran, and you include, of course, Xi Jinping in China, and you're seeing this axis of evil that is a direct result of the projection of weakness by Joe Biden and the Biden administration on the world stage. And it's a significant problem that has a lot of problematic potential to it if it continues this way.
Senator, is this not a remake of what we saw nearly 100 years ago in the 1930s, where we saw the axis of evil developing? I mean, have we not learned from history what happens when we're weak on the international stage?
Evidently not. And Ronald Reagan is probably spinning in his grave right now, because remember, Ronald Reagan stepped forward in a really big way, understanding the common enemy to the United States was communism, communism itself. As he said famously in Fargo, North Dakota once, they would take our God from us. And so now we sort of look at communism, at least as a nation, I certainly don't, you certainly don't, but some people look at communism as almost a desired form of government in some respects. They see capitalism as sort of secondary to socialism, and not really understanding the history that you're talking about. In fact, I would submit to you that the lack of historical perspective is one of the things plaguing our country right now. And as far as regulating, homeschool parents, please, let's have some more homeschool parents that help remind our young people about the cost of weakness on the global stage and the responsibility that we have as the freest people in the world to protect that freedom. All of that said, you're exactly right. It is an axis of evil reconstituting itself, much like what happened 100 years ago. And if we're not careful, we're going to see the same result as we did 100 years ago, except that the United States of America is not going to be as poised to protect itself, much less lead a coalition into a third world war, which we would like to avoid. Again, Ronald Reagan prevented another war by being the strongest nation in the world and projecting that strength and bringing the Soviet Union to its knees without firing a single shot, along with, by the way, the Pope John Paul, as you recall, and Margaret Thatcher in Great Britain. We just don't have those statesmen anymore in the country or on the global stage.
I mean, what we see, I think, playing out right now is America's taken the role of what Britain was prior to World War II, with simply trying to appease our adversaries and our enemies. And history tells us that evil cannot be appeased. We cannot compromise with that which wants to destroy us. And they have made this very clear. Now, I am not, I'm not a hawk. I describe myself as a rational isolationist. Leave me alone and I won't bother you. But if you mess with me, you're in trouble. I mean, I think that should be our posture.
No question about it. But we do carry a responsibility as the United States of America, as the most blessed nation in the world. But remember, so much of what makes us strong, Tony, are our roots of faith. The roots of faith are what provide the virtue which leads to the type of country that we are and being the strong nation that we are. But we're not sending those signals anymore either. We're not sending the signals of virtue anymore. So it's a combination of things. We need a new generation of leaders to rise up that have the moral convictions and courage to step forward. Yeah, and be a little bit of that isolationist. However, we also want to be evangelists.
Senator Cramer, I want to thank you for bringing that point up, because I've repeated this often, And oftentimes in response to President Trump, who I greatly appreciate, and he wants to make America great again, and so do I. But the path to being great is first being good. And when we lose that moral foundation that you just spoke of, it's hard for us to be taken serious on the international stage. When we have an administration right now that their top foreign policy objective is to push abortion and the LGBTQ agenda, it's hard to be taken seriously as a nation.
No, there's no question, Tony. In fact, just last week, we passed out of the Armed Services Committee the National Defense Authorization Act. And we spend, two long days, sort of hold up together in a classified setting to push this bill out and to debate lots of amendments. But, Tony, we spend hours of that time discussing the very things you just brought up, as though fighting wars is secondary to a social experiment whereby they want to pay for, not just allow, but pay for members of the military to have transgender surgeries, to pay for the travel for abortions, as you know. These are just, I'm sure other countries look at us and go, my gosh, these people are going to be easy to beat in a war. They're more consumed with transgender identity politics than they are with defending freedom in their own country, much less around the world. So I know it all matters.
Senator, I was just, I missed you. I was in your state just a few weeks ago. I love there. Love being there. First time in North Dakota. That was my 50th state. You clearly represent your state. It's a great state, a very conservative state. But how do we get the rest of America, and there are many other states, but North Dakota is actually pretty good when it comes to faith, family, and freedom. How do we get that element back into the foundation of America? Because we can't be strong internationally until we're strong at home, and it comes back to the family, and it comes back to faith, Christian faith.
It really does, Tony. And I think the best way to do it, of course, is by example, right? So we want the rest of the country to be looking at the middle of the country and going, maybe we should be a little more like them. They seem to be a little happier people. They carry a little more joy on their face. They're optimistic people. Maybe we should try that. And I think the first thing is by example. But then, Tony, we do have to take advantage of opportunities like you give me to come onto your show and present that in a bigger format, and to articulate what we're all about. I appreciate you noticing that about our state. I was once the chairman of the Family Policy Council here in North Dakota, a couple of terms, in fact. And I was just honored to be able to do that. In fact, I might consider that more important work than what I'm doing right now, but thank God we have you and your organization with having our backs and holding us accountable. But I would invite you back to North Dakota. Come out to Western North Dakota, see Medora, see the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library, see patriotism in the very breath that you breathe out in Western North Dakota. And when you're done, you can head down to Mount Rushmore and do the same in South Dakota.
Well, Senator, I'll be happy to do it anytime in the spring or summer, but I'm not coming up there in the wintertime. Senator Cramer, always great to see you. Thanks so much for coming on the program today.
Thanks, Tony. Always my pleasure.
All right. Have a great day. All right. On the other side of the break, we're going to continue the conversation about the Senate Armed Services Committee and the recently advanced National Defense Authorization Act. Talk about those social programs. There's calls for women to register for the draft. What about that? Do we really need our women to fight our wars, or is there something else at play here? We're going to talk about it next on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at the Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
Research has found that there are 59 million American adults who are a lot like you. There are millions of people around the country who are born again, deeply committed to practicing their faith, and believe the Bible is the reliable word of God. But that's not all. They're also engaged in our government. They're voters. They're more likely to be involved in their community, and they're making a difference in elections. The problem is that a lot of them feel alone, too. We want to change that. FRC wants to connect these 59 million Americans to speak the truth together, no matter the cost. If you want to learn more about this group and what it means to be a spiritually active, governance-engaged conservative, or if you want to find out if you are one of these sage cons yourself, join us. Go to frc.org/sagecon, SageCon, to learn more. That's SageCon, SageCon, to learn more.
Hi, I'm Georgina, an intern here at Family Research Council, and I wanted to take a moment to tell you about FRC's incredible internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and a development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. This program features hands-on professional experience here in Washington, D.C., weekly biblical worldview training, tours around the district, opportunities to meet some of the country's most prominent policy experts, and more. The program also includes free housing, a meal stipend, and is available in spring, summer, and fall. If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, as a current intern, I cannot recommend this program enough. For more information or to apply, please go to frc.org/internships. Again, that's frc.org/internships. Apply today.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Berg. It's good to have you with us. And by the way, talking about these value issues, faith, family, freedom, things that really matter that the Republican Party has been known for decades. Well, those are going to be debated at the upcoming Republican convention. I'm going to talk more about that in the coming weeks, but I will be a delegate on the platform committee, and I need your help. I need you to weigh in. Many of you already have, but I need you to help us in this effort to preserve the planks on life, on family, all these things that really matter. So if you'd like to join us, we'll give you some instructions. You can be a part of the team. Text LIFE to 67742. That's LIFE to 67742. I need your help. All right, last week, the Senate Armed Services Committee, as we were just discussing, advanced a version of the National Defense Authorization Act that includes language to enroll women in the Selective Service System, often referred to as the draft. Now, several Republicans in both chambers of Congress spoke out against this immediately, and the backlash has grown since. Some Senate observers now believe it's possible that the growing discontent could lead Senate Democrat leader Chuck Schumer to stall bring the NDAA to the Senate floor until after the November election. Of course, that misses the deadline of the new fiscal year. Joining me now to discuss this is Tom Kilgannon. He's the president of Freedom Alliance, an organization that provides support to America's military families and advocates for strong national defense. In 2017, he was appointed by then Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, to the National Commission on Military, National, and Public Service, which conducted a full review of the military selective service process. Tom, welcome back to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, Tony. It's always great to be on. Thank you.
This has become one of those recurring issues. The left never goes away. They never drop it. They just keep doing it until they, it's kind of like a kid just pestering his parents until they wear, you know, he wears them out. I think this is back again. It's going to keep coming back. How do we stop this?
Well, Tony, you're right. It does keep coming back, and it has been for a number of years now. And it's a problematic provision to have women register with Selective Service because, as you said, that is conscription for war. And we need to do everything we can to get this out of the final version. I think what makes this version unique in this year for the National Defense Authorization Act is that you really have two provisions. You have one on the Senate side, as you described, which requires women to register with Selective Service. And on the House side, you have a provision in which young men would automatically be registered with Selective Service. So if these two provisions come together and stay in the bill until the end in the final version, what you would have is both young men and women 18 to 26 years old automatically being registered with Selective Service, which means for these females, they wouldn't even know about it because they have no history or tradition of doing this. And they wouldn't, many of them would not even know that they are signed up for the draft until they get that draft notice.
Tom, many that are advocating for this say, well, we have to have it because of the military's recruiting woes. But the military's having recruiting woes because of policies like this that are trying to blur the gender lines and using the military not to fight and win wars, but as a place of social experimentation.
Yeah, there's no question about it that, you know, in his first months as Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin committed what I think is one of the worst acts of malpractice that any Secretary of Defense has ever done, which it's when he claimed that the entirety of the Defense Department, all the military, were extremists. And that has, that and many other provisions have kept young men and women from enlisting and signing up. These last few years have been the worst in recruitment for the all-volunteer force. But you have a similar dynamic taking place with registration for Selective Service. So what is happening is you've got two main ways that Selective Service signs young men up. One is through the applications for driver's licenses at the state level. And over the last 25 years, young men have chosen not to get driver's licenses by a wide margin. So the number of young men aged 16 to 19 who are getting driver's licenses has declined from 64% to 40% in the last 25 years. Similarly, the other main way that registration for with Selective Service is done is through federal financial aid. And right now, over the last 10 years, you have 1 million fewer young men who are going to college. That means 1 million fewer young men signing up for federal financial aid. And so that is part of what's driving this on the part of the Senate and House Democrats who are putting these automatic and female provisions in the NDAA.
Where are these guys? How are they getting around if they're not getting the driver's license?
Well, I think, you know, bicycles and
they're letting their girlfriends drive.
The Biden economy, the high cost of a vehicle, the high cost of insurance, the high cost of gasoline
they're pushing, impacting their decisions. Yeah, pushing buses and electric transportation, probably scooters or something. But when you look at the decline in men, young men serving in the military, I mean, disproportionately, they come from the South. They come from conservative red states. And when you're pushing all of this woke ideology on them, they're saying, hey, wait a minute, that's not what I want. I mean, I've talked to many of them. I've talked to many of their parents. And this is, I think this is what's driving our decline in large part, is that men don't want any part of this.
Yeah, and there's an article out today, Tony, that indicated just that, which is that the enlistment rates for females has remained steady over the last 5 years or so. But the number of men who are enlisting has gone down for exactly those reasons. You have the woke policies, you have the social indoctrination in the military, and it's causing real problems. And I think, you know, one of the things I want to make clear is, look, we're all about voluntary service.
Right, right.
But what young women need to understand is that this provision that we're talking about has nothing to do with them going down to the recruiter's office and making an informed, voluntary decision to serve their country.
Right.
What this has to do is the federal government saying to them, we are going to require that you serve your country. So if this goes through, they lose their voice, they lose their choice, their body, and young women will no longer be vessels for new life. They'll be instruments of war. And that's not the way our society has typically adjudicated this issue.
Tom Kilgannon, great point. Thank you so much for joining us today. Absolutely. If women want to serve, they should be free to serve if they want. But we shouldn't be a nation that depends upon drafting women to fight our wars. All right, don't go away. More Washington Watch on the other side.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you with us. Again, let me give you that contact information to be a part of preserving the Republican Party platform, making sure that it's pro-family, pro-life. Text LIFE to 67742. That's LIFE to 67742. Well, speaking of policy issues this week, Arizona's Democratic Governor Katie Hobbs vetoed Senate Bill 1511, a bill that would have aided detransitioning steps for individuals who had previously undergone gender procedures. I mean, say they had surgeries or other treatments that transitioned them from their biological sex to the other sex. Now, the measure, which passed in both the Arizona House and Senate, called for health insurance plans that cover transition procedures to also be required to provide coverage for detransition procedures. The bill would have also required that physicians who perform gender transition procedures agree to provide or pay for the performance of gender detransition procedures. Now, what does it tell us when a Democratic governor is so committed to the transgender ideology that she blocks help for those harmed by these procedures? Now, about half the state's insurance companies cover transition procedures, but very few detransitioning. Joining me now to discuss this is Walt Heyer. He's a senior fellow here at the Family Research Council and the founder of SexChangeRegret.com. Walt, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, thanks, Tony. It's great to be on, especially to talk about this particular bill and this topic.
Well, you've had personal experience with this, and you have counseled hundreds of people who have gone through the transition and have attempted to detransition. There is a hostility toward those who want to detransition, is there not?
Yeah, I think there is, especially in many of the states like Katie Hobbs, who she's actually, what she's saying here with her not signing the bill is that there are no people who go through it because she said it was unnecessary. That was one of her statements, and that it risked exposing the people's names and so forth and their identities. Actually, the bill within the bill says that their names cannot be disclosed, not even their driver's license or anything else about them. So I'm really puzzled, except I'd have to believe she didn't read the bill or just blatantly just signed off saying I'm just not going to have any part of it.
Yeah, I was very intrigued by her veto letter that said the measure was unnecessary and would create a privacy risk for patients. I mean, unnecessary? I mean, if someone has gone through, and we now know that we've had the Attorney General from Missouri on the program many times, that has engaged in an investigation showing how parents are really kind of strong-armed by these quote-unquote doctors doing these procedures, you know, saying, hey, do you want a dead son or you want a daughter? And they're pushing kids into this. And so it would seem that it may be necessary because there are some regrets and people want to come out of it.
It's absolutely necessary. I mean, many of the people have been radically harmed by either the hormones, which require oftentimes the reversal of taking off the gender identifying hormones and going back on the ones you should have in your body. And when you do this, I know from my own experience that it took several years for my body to adjust back to the synthetic natural hormones in my body. So, and I was going to medical doctors for years. And so to deny that opportunity for people to be properly treated, given effective, sound treatment so that they can balance their life out is really appalling.
Bottom line, Walt, this is driven by ideology. Because when you look at, you look at this holistically. You've got efforts in states to ban any type of talk therapy, just mm-hmm. being able to talk to children who are going through gender dysphoria, that's being denied them. It's like there's only one path and there's no exit door. It's to drive them into this corral of radical transgender ideology, which includes experimental drugs and surgeries, and there's no exit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Dr. Charles L. Ilenfeld in 1978 came out. He had been administering hormone therapy to some 500 transgender identifying women. And he came out publicly and said, there is too much harm and too many of the people commit suicide as a result of going through these procedures. So he said, I'm going to become a psychiatric doctor so that I can help the people find the underlying causes. And so, you know, we've had data all through in the last many years about the harms being done by hormones and surgery. And for her to deny this is like she doesn't look at anything. I mean, I see it, as you mentioned, I've worked with many, many people over the years, and they all need help. And they right. need medical help, they need surgical help, they need psychological help. And to deny those three levels of help to somebody is really upsetting.
We're up against a break, Walt. Very quickly, there was a study in the Netherlands earlier this year that found that nearly two-thirds of children who wished that they belonged to the opposite sex, given enough time, everything leveled out for them and they became comfortable with their biological sex. So that would say that some of these who are rushed into this do need help getting back to what is normal and what is natural, and that is their biological sex.
It's absolutely right. And Ken Zucker also had a study on that out of Canada many, many years ago, back in, I think, the early 2000s.
Walt Heyer, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate you being courageous and brave out there trying to spare young people from this tragic ideology.
Thank you, Tony. Pleasure to be on.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch on the other side of the break. Federal control of homeschooling, that's what some are calling for.
The news reflects the world we live in, but it also shapes it. Like it or not, what we learn about the world on a daily basis impacts our thinking, our worldview, and ultimately our action. So much of today's media is built on a shaky foundation that can send us hurling toward harmful ideas and hopeless solutions. Family Research Council created the Washington Stand to be a news outlet that speaks from a firm foundation, bringing you news, commentary, and analysis of what's happening in America and around the world. The Washington Stand is unapologetically biblical and uncompromisingly committed to truth. Equip yourself for the world we live in with a biblical worldview found daily at The Washington Stand. Find us at WashingtonStand.com. That's WashingtonStand.com.
America was a bright light until the culture gave into darkness. But we won't. We're in a battle for the soul of our nation, between right and wrong, between truth and lies. At a time when the mainstream media is blocking Americans from truth, millions are searching for a source of trustworthy news that shines a light in the darkness. At this time of great need, FRC is lighting the way forward. For 40 years, Family Research Council and its partners have stood together to advance and defend biblical truth in government and culture. Between our flagship broadcast program, Washington Watch, with Tony Perkins, to our news outlet, The Washington Stand, FRC is providing believers across the country with news they can trust from a biblical worldview. When you stand with FRC, you help light the way forward for America and the next generation. Go to frc.org/give.
If you're a young adult passionate about seeing biblical values championed in our country, check out Family Research Council's internship program. This three-month program is both a discipleship and development opportunity where you get to take part in truly meaningful work and help advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and our culture. Featuring hands-on experience, biblical worldview training, free housing, and more, this internship is a great opportunity for spiritual and professional development. Check out frc.org/internships to apply today.
As a congressman, Jody Heiss witnessed firsthand how the gradual erosion of congressional integrity has crippled America's faith in its most essential institutions. His newly released book, Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People, sounds the alarm on the attempts of career bureaucrats to subvert our elections and provide solutions to make every vote count. Help preserve election integrity and order Sacred Trust today wherever books are sold.
I'm Tony Perkins, and this is Washington Watch. Good to have you with us on this Thursday. Again, to join us in making sure that the Republican Party platform remains strong on the core issues of life and family and freedom, religious freedom, text the word LIFE to 67742, and you can join the team. It's LIFE to 67742. Our word for today comes from 1 Chronicles chapter 11. Now, there, the Philistines were gathered for battle, and there was a piece of ground full of barley. So the people fled from the Philistines. But they took their stand in the middle of that field, defended it, and killed the Philistines, so that the Lord brought about a great victory. Now, in the second half of this chapter in 1 Chronicles, we have a roll call of the mighty men of David that led to his success. As was often the case by the raiders that terrorized and impoverished the people, the Philistines came at harvest time. People were intimidated, they were scared, and they fled. But these men, these mighty men, took a stand in the midst of the field of barley. And look what happened. God showed up and saved them by a great deliverance. Sometimes all it takes to see a mighty display of God's power is for someone to take a stand. Question is, what is God calling you to stand for? To join us in our journey through the Bible, text Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742 for our daily journey through the Bible. Yesterday, my home state of Louisiana joined the growing list of states that have passed laws for universal school choice, an option for parents that has grown in support, especially since COVID-induced school closures and Zoom classrooms. As more parents demand school choice, one educational option they're choosing is to homeschool their children, one I fully endorse. But the rise in parents stewarding their own children's education has led to a backlash from the left. Recently, the editors of the Scientific American magazine called for the federal government, which typically leaves education issues to the states, to seize control and implement federal standards for homeschool students. So why is the left so threatened by parents leading their children's education? And how should those who support homeschool education respond to these threats? Joining me now to discuss this is Mike Ferris. He founded the Homeschool Legal Defense Association more than 40 years ago, which was instrumental in legalizing homeschooling in all 50 states. He currently serves as the National Religious Broadcasters General Counsel. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch. Great to see you.
It's great to see you, Tony. Thank you so much.
So let me just start with this. Your reaction to the unsigned editorial from the Scientific American.
Well, the editors of the Scientific American need a basic course in constitutional law. I've done one, and I'd be glad to send them a copy for free so that they can learn. The federal government has no jurisdiction to implement the kind of plan that they are calling for, a very draconian plan. And on top of the fact that they're asking for something that is, if it's at all within the government's jurisdiction, it's within the states, not the federal government. But their motive and their operational plan apparently would be just on its face unconstitutional. One of the things they cite as a reason for needing this is they point to the fact that homeschoolers in large part teach their kids about creation as opposed to evolution.
Right.
And so that is something clearly that people have the right to do. And the fact that that's what motivates them shows how bigoted they really are. I mean, on top of the homeschooling issues, that they would have to, by the same token, go after a lot of private schools. Many, many good Christian schools teach the same principles as homeschoolers do. God created the world. Yes.
When you read this opinion piece, as you just pointed out, it clearly lacks any constitutional foundation for what they're asserting. It's almost laughable. One of the things they call for, and this is an example that they give, is that this is what they would like to see the federal government do, is that, for example, and I'm quoting, for example, homeschool parents should be required to pass an initial background check, as every state requires of all K through 12 teachers. A background check to teach your own children?
Yeah, it is amazing. You know, you could have them for all the rest of the day, but if you want to teach them about math and reading and science and the Bible, then you have to have a background check. It just doesn't make any sense. They do call for regulations, partly because of some cases where there have been people claiming to homeschool, have been found out to abuse and sometimes seriously abuse their children. The reality is, in the vast majority of cases like this over the last 40 years as I worked on these kinds of cases, the government officials knew about the problems with the family long before there was ever any claim to be a homeschooling family. The homeschooling family claim is just a pretense in the vast majority of these cases. And they use that, the officials use that as a cover-up for the fact that they failed to do any reasonable inquiry into the family when they first found out about the problems. And so, you know, if you're going to say if there's abuse in the situation, we need to have federal regulation of the schools, then the federal government needs to take over the public schools of this country, because the number of cases of sexual abuse of children by public school teachers dwarfs the number of any claim relative to homeschooling, just in sheer volume of numbers.
Right.
It's just far, far greater. And that's just it doesn't equate. That still remains a proper state issue. The state officials need to prosecute those teachers that do kind of criminal activities, not the federal government.
We're not calling for the closure of all public schools because of the abuse that takes place in public school settings. Of course, that's not stopping them from calling for the federal government to regulate, with the goal, I think, of basically making homeschooling the requirements so onerous that parents won't do it. But they also point to educational standards. And this is where I think, again, it's laughable when they say, well, you know, these kids are being educationally deprived. But have you looked at the test scores from the public schools in the last few years? I mean, last year was the lowest in decades in math and reading.
And years ago, when I first came to Washington in the mid-'80s, Albert Shanker, who was the head of the American Federation of Teachers, testified in a presidential hearing that was held in the Senate office buildings that the average public high school graduate is functionally illiterate, cannot rank order seven common fractions and do other basic math skills, cannot write a basic paragraph of a business letter. Now, this is the head of the second largest teachers union in the country 40 years ago saying the public schools were failing the public school graduates. It's not gotten better in the last 40 years. The reality is homeschooling works very, very well. There, you know, people say that the test scores are not conclusive. They're conclusive of this, that homeschooling performs adequately. That's absolutely conclusive. I think that the test scores also show that homeschooling is the best form of education. Now, there's more debate that could be raised about that claim, but we don't have to prove that we're the best. We just have to prove that we're at least as good as the public schools. And that claim is we walk away with that without any question whatsoever.
I mean, given the woke ideology that's invaded schools today, I think you give your kid a Dr. Seuss book and put them out underneath a tree in the front yard and it will come out better than the public school system. But at the bottom line of this, Mike Ferris, is it's a clash of worldviews.
Exactly.
What we see happening is this antagonism, hatred for a biblical worldview, which, as you pointed out, came out in this piece about the teaching of creationism.
That's really it. I mean, the people like Elizabeth Bartlett at Harvard, a law professor there, other law professors at Emory, at George Washington, at Northwestern in Chicago, have all made similar calls. They haven't asked for federal regulation. Most of them have asked for outright banning of homeschooling. And the reason that they give is the worldview reason. They want all children in America to be indoctrinated in their world. Not the parents' worldview. And as an article I wrote in the Peabody Journal of Education, that's published by Vanderbilt University, I point out that their parallel is the old Oregon law in the 1920s that banned all private schooling, sponsored by the Ku Klux Klan, as well as the practices of Nazi Germany that banned all private schooling, both homeschooling and parochial or private schools. That the intellectual foundation that these leftist progressives stand on is the Ku Klux Klan and the Third Reich. That's not very good territory. And the UN conventions are not something that I believe should ever be applied to the United States, but it's an interesting comparison here. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights say that parents have the prior right to decide what kind of school that they want for their children, for the very reason so that their moral foundation will match the parents, not the government's. And they did that in response to Nazi Germany. Yet we have progressives matching the philosophy of Nazi Germany in an apparent irony that really needs to be pointed out to them.
Mike Ferris, I want to transition to discussing, you know, not just the legal aspects and the attacks on homeschooling, but I mean, you've been a champion for homeschooling for 40 years. Homeschooled your kids. I'm an advocate of homeschooling. I worked with Homeschool Legal Defense when I was in the legislature to advance protections in my home state of Louisiana. You guys have always done great work. Let's talk about the practical benefits for families and for kids when their parents make that type of investment in their education by homeschooling them.
Well, the reason Vicki and I started homeschooling in 1983 is that we heard and read this truth. Children get their values from whoever they spend the majority of their time with. Now, our kids are not cookie cutters of either Vicki or I in any respect, but they share all of our core values about God, about the Bible, about America, about freedom, about the principles of protecting human life. We've effectively transmitted our values to our kids, and they've turned out just fine academically. One son has a PhD in biology and genetics from Notre Dame. Another son is about to get his PhD in nuclear physics from Michigan State. He's about a year away from that. Other kids have graduated with high honors from their colleges. Others didn't go to college, and they're doing just great in many other fields. And so we have seen our kids turn out really well. We have a very close family. We have consistent values. We have high academic achievement. I can't ask for anything better, and it's just the best thing we ever did for our family.
I echo that. I want to get you to elaborate just a moment on something you just said kind of in passing. Our family's close. I have found, experienced ourselves, homeschool families are close. And when we talk about close, they stick together, and it's not like they don't have outside relationships. They do. But there's a bond that takes place through that process of learning about life together.
Indeed. I mean, our family was very busy after 3 o'clock, just like any other normal family. Our kids played sports. They were in Awanas. They ballet. They did all kinds of things. But we spent the day together every day, day after day, year after year. And then, of course, normal family times at dinner and on the weekends and at church on Sunday. All those things add up over time. And quality time with your kids is a good idea. Quantity time is even better. And the result of quantity time is closeness. And it was just, it's just a wonderful experience. And you know, we have kids getting married. We have 30 grandkids. We have one great grandchild, and our grandkids are have all been homeschooled. Some of them went to the public school to play sports in high school, but they were all homeschooled the vast majority of their education. And it's just a terrific experience, and we are indeed very close.
Final question for you, Mike Ferris. When we going back to this attack, it's not new. I mean, this has been out there. It's perpetual. It's every year we're saying it's perennial. But what do we need to do to make sure we don't lose this God-given right to teach our own children?
Well, homeschoolers need to stay nimble and organized. I would encourage families to continue to join Homeschool Legal Defense Association. We are there to help families. I'm not employed there anymore, but I'm still the chairman of the board, have been for 43 years. We were there to protect their legal rights, both in courts and the legislatures. They also need to stay a part of their state homeschool organizations. That's how we won the freedom. That's how we'll maintain it, is by being organized and nimble and ready to act. The other thing I would say, the vast majority of Americans now have an affinity toward homeschooling because of the COVID situation. Every family feels to some extent or another that they kind of homeschooled their children during the COVID period of time, at least for a little while. Maybe not in a traditional sense, but they at least feel akin to homeschoolers. And so the political advancement that comes from that situation where families feel like these are good people, they're doing good things for their kids. And I believe that a lot of families who might have freaked out because of keeping their public school kids at home during that period of time, they looked at homeschoolers and said, well, their kids turn out okay, so I think our kids might turn out okay as well. We brought that kind of assurance and affinity, and that's politically very important. I think we're in a really strong position. We just got to keep putting the pedal to the metal and not letting any lackadaisical spirit come in. We got to defend our liberty day in, day out.
Great advice, Mike Ferris. Always great to see you, my friend. Thanks so much for taking time to join us today. And thank you for all you've done for our country, in particular for the families when it comes to homeschooling.
Well, thank you so much, Tony. Appreciate it.
And folks, I mean, there you have it. It's a great option for many families. But for those who are in it and those that might choose it, we got to defend it. It is ultimately parents who have been given the authority and the responsibility by God to teach their children, and the state should never step in the way. All right, folks, out of time for today, but I want to thank you for joining us. And until next time, I encourage you with the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means,
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com.